Accession number 19093, Reel 1.
Mars Crowther, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Bradford.
Which year was this?
1915, 23rd of June.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Bradford?
I lived in Bradford until about 1928. Then we moved to a place called Yeadon, which was a suburb of Leeds. And I finished my schooling there.
How old were you when you left school?
It would be 14. How old was I? Oh, I'd be 14 years of age, that's right, yeah.
So in 1929?
Yeah.
Did you get a job?
Yes, straight away, yes.
Doing what?
I worked for the Leeds Cooperative Society as an errand boy. In those days, believe it or not, you had to have a job. You couldn't leave school unless you had a job to go to. You couldn't enforce that today, could you? Because the jobs are not available.
And did you stay with that kind of work?
No, I was employed for 2 years, and then I always remember what they said. The society said, they give me the notice, you know, discharge notice, after 2 years. The society has as many assistants as it can profitably employ, you know, and it underlined the words profitably, you know, because they can't absorb everybody. It's like a blind alley job in a sense, wasn't it? So, and then I've drifted from one job to another, etc.
And do I understand that you joined the army pre-war?
No, I joined the army. Can you remember the period when they said just prior to war, double up and join the territorial army? That's when I joined. That would be 1939, yeah.
Why did you decide to go into the territorial army?
Well, I think I was a patriot, really, yeah.
Do you know which month in 39 you joined?
Oh dear. Well, war started in September, didn't it?
Yes.
I couldn't say what month it would be. No, I can't say what month it'd be.
But you joined up in Yeadon, did you?
I left Yeadon. I got married in Yeadon. Then we came to Goole to live.
So you joined the TA in Goole?
In Goole, yes. It was a Goole anti-aircraft unit. 286 it was. 91st Regiment.
286 what?
Anti-aircraft unit. 286 battery.
286 battery, and what are the numbers?
91st Regiment, that's it, yeah.
Royal Artillery?
Royal Artillery, yeah.
Can you tell me what kind of training you had with them?
Yes, I was selected to be what they call a range finder. And we used to go out on the riverbank and take sightings and so forth, training, yeah. But we didn't go to any camps because before we knew where we was, the war was on top of us, wasn't it? But we didn't have any. The only guns we had were World War One naval guns with what we call open sights. We used to train on those. But so when war was declared with no equipment, we used to go on a reliefing basis to the hull units and so forth. And eventually we got our own guns, of course, and got our own gun sights.
What kind of guns did you get?
3.7 Vickers.
What did you think to them?
I thought they were great. Well, nothing to compare them with, was there, really?
And how did you operate them?
Well, I was on the rangefinder. And that's measured the range of the target. Height Finder, we call them, Height Finder. A bar and Stroud it was. UB2, I think. Or was it UB10, yeah. And we went on various gun sites around the... what we had around the River Humber was the Humber Gun Zone. You with me? The idea was to protect the... Because the Germans used to come in the river laying mines, you know, and the idea was to try and prevent that.
And you travelled all over Humber Gun Zone, didn't
yeah,
you?
That's right, yes, yeah.
Which sites did you visit in the Humber Gun Zone?
Oh, the Sunk Island was one. Spurn Point was another. And then there was around the city of Hull itself, with guns, and then New Holland. You know New Holland, don't you? We had a gun site there. And there was Goxhill. Oh, we all had a code name for them, you know.
Whereabouts in Hull itself were the gun sites?
Costello playing fields. Where are those? There was gun site there. Where are those?
That's West Hull.
West Hull, yeah. And then we also had, early part of the war, due to lack of guns, we had the Lewis guns on top of the factories, Needless Chocolate Factory. And the works at Salt End was a distillery. We had Lewis guns there, you know, for what we term low-flying aircraft.
What kind of men were in your unit?
Mostly volunteers, round about my own age, yeah.
Were they all local men?
Oh yes, more or less, yes, nearly all local men.
What did you think of the leadership in the unit?
I couldn't fault it in any shape or form, right?
Were the officers and NCOs also from Gull?
Yes. Well, we did get what you call a PSI, a permanent staff instructor. He was a regular army. He came and showed us the ropes, as you might say, you know, learnt us all what had to be learnt.
So, at first, you mustn't have had any work to do, any firing to do?
No, it was mostly, you know... Well, you got what like an alert, and you didn't always get a target, did you? You know, and very rarely had what you call a seen target. You know, it's a watch and wait business, wasn't it?
So, when did things start to warm up, as far as enemy attacks were concerned?
Well, I wasn't involved in the whole one. We had guns down the river at Cleethorpes and Grimsby. That was all part of the Humber Gun Zone, you know. And we used to fire, then we had one at something, not Barrowhaven. Right at the extreme point of the Humber, around the coast there. And we used to fire star shells, which illuminated, and then the idea was for the RAF to, the German planes would be silhouetted underneath. It illuminated the whole area, and that was one way the RAF were able to deal with them. That was one gun site, was that. Stepney Lock, Stepney, if you're familiar with that area.
Is this Lincolnshire?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
But you were telling me earlier, off the record, that you couldn't reach the enemy planes.
Well, the when was at Goxhill, the targets were out of range.
But were you in the Hull Blitz?
No. When I was at Goxhill, I went on leave next morning and went through the city. And the surprising thing was, I was gawking around, as you might say, you know, looking at all the damage. And when I got, I thought, well, the train, you know, it would be late because everything had been bombed, and it went out dead on time. So I had to wait for the next one. Couldn't say that today, could you?
No. What did you see of the damage in Hull?
Oh, all the debris on the... The main thing I see is the wires for the trams and that all tangled up in the road and things like that, and of course all buildings, all the fronts collapsed and so forth. But,
what did morale in Hull seem to be like under the bombing?
Well, it was a case of grin and bear it, as I saw it. A lot of people would go out into the country on the night to escape the bombing, out into the fields, when they had successive raids. But it was quite boring to some extent, was the... we also had guns at Sunk Island, you know Sunk Island, down the river there. On one occasion, we used to lay the instruments on the apex of the searchlight beams like that. And with us having a bigger magnification, on one occasion, I saw this plane and I reported it. And they said, "It's don't worry, it's a friendly plane." And next minute, I saw the bombs come out to... And I said, "Well, that friendly plane has just dropped some bombs," and they dropped them on Alden's throat. So a bit of a joke, that, really, you know, the friendly plane dropping bombs.
Were you happy in this unit?
Yeah, quite happy, yeah. I got some good friends and that, yeah.
But what happened to you next?
Well, we went down to London to help out the York Battery. The York Battery, which was 2-2-1, and that was mostly people from the chocolate factories. And they, what happened when he started to bomb London, we didn't have sufficient guns, so they took them all from the north of England to fire the bombardment in London, to fire the barrages, and left the rest of the country virtually undefended. It was a gamble, and whether it paid off, I don't know, because the... He continued to bomb London. Had he known that, we'd have probably gone and bombed the city, which was virtually unprotected.
So, whereabouts in London were you stationed?
Walthamstow. And the gun site was ZE10.
Was it in a park or what?
That's the only place you could put guns in London, because there's always a shortage of open spaces, isn't there? And you have to have what's termed a field of fire. You know, you don't be knocking somebody's house down. And that's the only places which we found suitable. In some cases, they were near to bowling greens and that, and tennis courts, and any wasteland. And that was opposite the Delarue factory. They were famous for printing money, but I think at that time they were making munitions or something. Well, every factory would be making munitions, wouldn't they?
What did you see of the Blitz in London then?
What didn't we see? You know, it was... Yeah, well, you see all the damn... Man, London's a vast place. The only time we got out of camp to see anything... because we were virtually lucky. It dropped bombs all around us, thousands of incendiary bombs, and we only got one in the camp that went through a corner of a hut onto a gunner's bed. That was only one. And all around us, you know, you could see factories, you know, on fire, and houses bombed and so forth. We were very lucky. And the only time we got out of camp, because we was firing so many rounds, we were wearing out the gun barrels, the only time we had to go to ordnance to bring some more, take the barrels in and get some more gun barrels back. And we looked forward to that.
Why?
Well, the only time you got out of camp and you saw what was happening. And we used to take them to near Elstree, you know, the film studios, to a place there to get new guns.
And so, did Walthamstow get badly bombed?
Pardon?
Did Walthamstow get badly
bombed? Yes, it
did,
yes, yeah. Yeah.
What was morale like in that area?
Oh, very good, very good.
How did you like being in London as opposed to the Humber gun zone?
Well, we enjoyed it because it was action, wasn't it? Yeah, we were actually doing something.
I don't suppose you know the dates that you're in London, do you?
No, it was just prior to the... It was during the Battle of Britain. Remember, that would be August and September time, wasn't it?
Well, Battle of Britain's usually taken to be from about June or July up to about October, yes.
Yeah, and I know there was a threat of invasion, and then they got to a stage when they said there no longer is a threat of invasion.
Were you there very long, many months?
I would say I was there about a couple of months. You forget a period of time, don't you? On one occasion, I was on the telephone, it came through that 200 plus aircraft was approaching London. Well, I knew there wouldn't be ours because we didn't work on batches of 200. And it came through on this telephone, now identified as hostile. I also remember the officer saying, "Where's my tin?" You know. Anyway, we didn't see any of that 200. All we saw in the distance was the vapour trails in the sky, because the RAF were, you know, sorted them out as they came across. They never got to Walthamstow.
So whilst you were in Walthamstow, was it warm weather or cold weather?
Oh, it's quite good weather, yes, yes.
Mm. So it sounds as though it was around about September time.
Yeah.
Did you personally think that the Germans would invade?
No, I don't think. I didn't think at that time that they would invade. I had every confidence in the army and the navy to stop it.
So, were you in lodgings or something in Walthamstow?
No,
or
it was on a gun site. Amusing thing was, when the guns fired, it used to break all the glass in the huts. And the plumbers would come and put new glass in. And then it would happen again. Then eventually they ran out of glass. So obviously they hadn't done any research in regards the nearness of the... And what was happening was firing guns night and day. And we were all dog tired. Can you imagine that? And we weren't turning out quick enough. So the officer said, "Well, we'll sort this out," and he got some bell tents from Ordnance, and we were actually sleeping, you know, when there wasn't an alert on, you went in this tent, you know, adjacent to the guns, and so that you could man your guns much quicker.
So what did you think to your living conditions?
Well, you accepted it, didn't you?
And after Walthamstow, after this couple of months or so in Walthamstow, where did the unit go then?
Ah, yes, well... They anticipated it would have a go at the aircraft industry. And we went to Norwich. And there was a big place there called Bolton Poles. And they made aircraft. However, it was a long period of inactivity there. It never came to sort it out. But it did eventually after we'd gone. And we never fired there. But eventually did came and bomb Norwich.
And how did you get on with the people in Norwich?
I don't remember ever going out. I think it was, don't remember having any what we could call local leave. I don't remember going into the town itself.
Were you actually at Bolton and Paul's factory?
No, it's a gun site on the outskirts, yeah.
Do you know whereabouts it was in Norwich?
No, I've no idea.
And what was the next thing after this then?
I've forgotten. I can't remember. Because in March 42, I went abroad.
How did that come about?
Then?
How did it come about?
Well, they needed reinforcements in the Middle East for the 8th Army.
Did you go out with this air battery?
No, I went out as... I was the one who had leave most recent. Oh, sorry. I was the one that had leave most recent, so they said I would have to go. I was selected at what they called a War Office posting, that's what they said, yeah. Which didn't worry me, because I knew eventually, I'd read quite a lot of books about war, and I knew eventually they wouldn't keep all those fit men in England on guns, you know, because anti-aircraft, as you know, it ties a lot of people down, doesn't it? You know.
So you got a War Office posting in March 1942.
We landed in, it was December 41. I'll tell you where I was. I went on a radar course to Hull. And that would be the 7th of December. And they bombed Pearl Harbor while I was there. And when I got back, Sergeant Major said, leave your kit on the lorry, Crowther. You're going abroad. And I said, well, you people won't be long after me. And my prediction was right. Because in August, the battery itself came out as a unit.
Did you experience any bombing in Hull when you were on the radar course?
No.
What did you learn on the radar course?
It was how to operate it and so forth. Because what was happening, we had the Mark 1 and then the equipment was being modernised. We got what we call the Mark 1 Star then, new equipment. And it was different to operate.
What did you think of the quality of the instruction that you got on it?
Oh, very good, very good. But I think they emphasised too much on the theory side. I think they realised at the latter end that it didn't really matter that everybody learnt the theory of radiolocation. You know, all you need to know is how to operate the set in itself. It did seem to be a waste of money, you know, to learn everybody the whole setup.
Whereabouts in Hull did you do the course?
That was near the Five Ways, over the gun site near the Five Ways. I don't know what playing field that was. But I could go to it. Well, it's probably built up now.
So, can you describe how you got... Did you go out as an individual then? Or as part of a unit?
No, it was just a War Office posting. I went out with 800 others, all Royal Artillery from Woolwich Barracks in London.
Can you describe the journey?
Went by rail to Liverpool. And then convoy all the way to Africa, stopping at Sierra Leone. The ship stopped there for water. And that was about 2 days, I think, because there was only two water boats to, you know, water all the troop ships and that. Because, as you know, on a troop ship, you need an awful lot of water, don't you? And then we called it Durban. And then up the Red Sea. And we landed in Egypt on the 5th of March, 42.
What did you think the conditions on the voyage?
They were quite good, really. Because according to what I've read, the shipping companies were paid so much per man. And it's entirely up to them, you know, what they give you. You know, as regards food and so forth. Hello.
Do you remember the name of the ship?
Yeah, Otranto. I think she was 27,000 tons.
And when you got to the Suez Canal, what happened to you then?
We got on a train to Cairo. The Port of Suez it was.
And at Cairo?
Well, that was the base depot for the Royal Artillery, a place called Al Marza.
Was that, were you in transit there?
Yes, yes.
Then what happened to you?
And then I was posted to 16 anti-aircraft battery. Number 16, which was a regular army unit.
And what were they equipped with?
Pardon?
What were they equipped with in the way of guns?
Oh, 3.7s. And we were down the canal at a place called, Casferit, which was a big airfield nearby.
Was it peaceful, or did you have to fire the guns?
Oh, it's quite peaceful, yeah.
What rank did you have by now?
Pardon?
What rank did you have by now?
I never was promoted. I was a gunner all the time. No, I was what they call an operator fire control, like a separate grade, because I was on radar. And we got considerably more pay than equivalent to a sergeant, I think. Which it didn't make you want to be promoted, really, because you were getting as much money as them, and you didn't have all the hassle.
Where did most of these men come from in 16 Battery?
Do you know, I can't hear. I wonder what's the matter with this thing.
Whereabouts did most of the men come from in 16 Battery?
Oh, that I couldn't say, you know, because they were a regular army unit. They were actually... Now, this one's some believing. They were the survivors of two units that had been chased out of Greece and Crete. And they made them up, and then they still needed, 100 reinforcements, and I was one of them, to make them up to standard. You know, to make them up to strength, that's a word, isn't it? And some of them were a bit, what we call bomb happy, as you might say. Because they'd had an awful time, you know, in the withdrawal from Crete and that.
How did their bomb happiness show itself?
The shakes, you know. And nervous reaction to, any noise and that, you know.
But you weren't getting any enemy air raids?
No, we weren't, no.
What happened next?
Well, we kept moving around in Egypt, went to gun sites in Cairo, Alexandria, Port Said, and...
How did you like it in Greece? In Egypt, rather.
Oh, I didn't mind it, really. The sun shone all day, and...
Did you have much contact with the Egyptians?
When I was in Cairo, I made friends with an Egyptian fellow, and we had early warning set near the pyramids, and I was waiting for there's a tram car goes from Cairo to the pyramids. We were waiting there for his tram car, and he stopped in his taxi. He stopped in his car and said, "Oh, Johnny, we don't want a taxi." He said, "I'm not a bee. Taxi, I'll give you a lift into Cairo," and it became quite friendly, you know. He took us for a drink and that, and whenever I was in Cairo, we used to look him up.
What was his job?
I'm not so sure what his job was, really, but he was quite wealthy, and he lived quite near to where this gun site was. And
what was his attitude towards Britain and the British?
Well, I think he'd been, he spoke perfect English. I think he'd been on a cotton selling commission. And he'd been to England quite a few times, so he's quite pro-British.
And he lived in Cairo?
And he lived in Cairo, on Pyramids Road it was. Ahmed Yahir, they called him. And he was quite friendly. The only thing he wanted...